This is Ozarks at Large for the first day of October 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. This is a weekend for the mechanically inclined among us. Fayetteville is hosting, of course, Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. Eureka Springs has its own Corvette Weekend this weekend. And tomorrow in Fort Smith, more than a dozen schools from western Arkansas and eastern Oklahoma will show off their robot creations. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Egnihotri-Madolker has this story.
16 teams from high schools across Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Missouri will be participating in the 2010 River Valley Best Robotics Competition on October 16th in Stubblefield Center at the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith. BEST stands for Boosting Engineering, Science, and Technology, and is a middle and high school robotics competition that aims to engage students in, well, engineering, science, and technology. John Martini, an assistant professor of electronics technology at UA Fort Smith and director of River Valley BEST, says the university has participated in the competition since 2003.
The robotics competition at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, which is called River Valley BEST, is one of many hubs. In fact, there's about 41 different hubs throughout the United States that have similar competitions every year around the same time frame. The first part of October is when the competitions are actually scheduled.
The participating teams are provided with two kits that contain everything that the teams need to build robots. John says these kits are given free of cost. In fact, the competition itself requires no participation fee.
The teams get two kits. One kit is called a consumable kit. Those are items that we really don't need to have back from the teams. Those are things like pieces of wood, plastics, metals, fasteners, nuts and bolts, screws, glue, epoxy, tape. And then we also give them another kit which is called a returnable kit. And by the nature of that, that's all the new electronics and the software and the ability to control that a robot that they've built through a joystick controller by talking to a computer over a Wi-Fi network.
This year, students are building their robots based on a very interesting topic.
This year's theme is called Total Recall, and the manufacturing process that we're basing this on is using a technique or a way of assuring quality called Six Sigma. Six Sigma looks for the removal of defects from the production of a product. And so what the students have to do with the robots is they have to interact with the game floor, and the game floor has a way for them to produce two different items. One are called gadgets and the other one are called gizmos.
The robots are required to sift through the gadgets and gizmos, including colored golf balls and plastic eggs with magnets, removing those considered defective. Wendy Hall, high school science teacher at Gantz High School in Gantz, Oklahoma, says the themes from past River Valley BEST competitions have ranged from space to aircrafts and a variety of other topics.
Our first year, we did the competition called Laundry Quandary, and we built a robot that would hang handkerchiefs, which represented clothes, on clotheslines at different heights, or gather clothes and put them in a clothes basket. And then the second year that we were in the competition, we built a robot that would be equivalent to someone on Mars that was retrieving fuel cells and food boxes and things like that. And our robot would pick up the fuel cells, which were small bottles, and then carry them to a holding area. And we won the competition that year at Fort Smith. And then our third year, it was an airplane factory, and the robot was to go into a holding area, retrieve parts to put together a simulated airplane.
But how does one actually build a robot, especially with limited resources?
The first thing we do is we get together and we brainstorm as a group what we want our robot to do. There is a certain task that the robot has to do every year. And then we brainstorm about how would we build a robot to perform that task. And then I also have a mentor, Robert Forrest, who is an engineer, and he helps us out with our brainstorming and making our blueprints and our drawings to get started on the project. And then we take everything down to his machine shop, and that's where we work after school and on weekends.
The participating teams are scheduled to give the community a preview tomorrow, that is Mall Day, between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. at Central Mall in Fort Smith. Derek Goodson, an instructor at Western Arkansas Technical Center at the UA Fort Smith, says, even though Mall Day is an exciting opportunity to test your work before the final event on October 16th, teams need to be careful.
The other name for Mall Day is Industrial Espionage Day. And it's called that for a reason. A lot of teams will do that. They'll see somebody else's idea and say, you know, well, maybe we could try to do that. The big thing is the team that developed it has had 4 weeks to come up with that idea. By the time you see it at Mall Day, you've only got 2 weeks to see if you can put it together. So it's a little bit more difficult in that way. But, you know, I've also seen schools that go to Mall Day with their robot and have, like, a trash bag over part of it because they don't want to show – they know how it works, and they don't want to show everybody else what they've got.
But even though teams risk imitation of their ideas, they're often inspired and amazed at other teams' efforts.
The first year I was at UA Fort Smith, we finished first place in the robot competition. When you get the parts, everybody gets the same kit of parts. Everybody has to build from the same set of materials. Well, all these materials came in a cardboard box. One of the teams the first year that we did this used the cardboard box that the parts came in as an integral part of their robot. You don't really think of using the container that the parts came in, but they did it that year, and they used it very well. It was very impressive.
For those who think that a robot competition might be a quiet affair, Derek has some news.
The first year that I started teaching here, they recruited me to do Best Robotics, and they told me how, you know, it was a robot competition. I'm a big sports fan, and they told me it was like a sporting event, and I didn't really believe them. But they were exactly correct. They give out earplugs at the door for a reason. But it's really something to see, and to see what a bunch of, you know, high school, junior high, elementary school students can come up with just out of their own brains is really impressive.
For Ozarks at Large, this is Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
Building robots can help high school students better prepare for a college education, and juniors and seniors at Arkansas high schools this fall can use their creative problem-solving abilities in another way to earn some money for college. The William Jefferson Clinton Presidential Center is sponsoring an essay contest in conjunction with an upcoming temporary exhibit at the center about Haiti. The $2,500 college scholarship will be awarded to the winning essay considering the topic of how to best help the nation devastated by an earthquake nearly a year ago. The essay should be written by an 11th or 12th grade student from an Arkansas public or private school or Arkansas homeschooled student, as if the writer were the head of a non-governmental organization currently present in Haiti. Rebecca Tenniel is a spokesperson for the essay contest.
We're really encouraging them to look at the infrastructure and look what's going on right now in Haiti. And if you were an NGO, what could you do to better logistics or to better the way that clean water is delivered, to help with medical responses? There's an interesting statistic that there are more people living in tents in Haiti than there are in the state of Arkansas right now. It just shows you the level of devastation countrywide, and we've all moved on with our lives, but it's the challenges are so enormous, and working together we realize we can solve them, but we do need focus and we need attention and we need some great new ideas.
And the winning essay will also be read by the author during an opening reception, is that right?
That's right. The winning essay will be read during a reception in Little Rock here at the center on December 3rd, and it's a great opportunity to showcase what your ideas and how you put them down on paper. And we're really excited about reading all of the essays. They're going to be great. And the one who wins is really going to stand out. And we just want to acknowledge the student who has a great idea. And hopefully we're gonna get thousands of submissions in. Like I said, we can't wait to read them. We know there are going to be some great ideas in there.
The exhibit, Commitment to Haiti, Build Back Better, discusses the earthquake, but there's more about Haiti than just the disaster.
Well, the exhibit is about Haiti, and of course a very pivotal, very timely issue is the earthquake. But clearly there was a life and a culture and a vibrancy that was very attractive to President Clinton before the earthquake. He was named Special Envoy, and even years and years ago, Haiti is where the First Lady, now Secretary Clinton, and President Clinton took their honeymoon. I mean, they've always been very compelled by the people and the culture of Haiti. This exhibit's going to focus on President Clinton's efforts, but it's also going to really look at the culture and the people and the resiliency, the beautiful resiliency of the people of Haiti. There's going to be focus on music and art, which is a huge part of Haitian culture. It's going to take a very wide look at Haiti, and of course, the earthquake is timely, and it's something that is still very, very top of mind, and we're looking to address that in the exhibit as well. But it's more than just about the earthquake. It's very hopeful. It's a very honest and it's a beautiful look at this country, just full of culture and heritage, and like we said, just this beautiful resiliency that the people have.
Rebecca Tenniel is a spokesperson for the essay contest sponsored by the William Jefferson Presidential Center in Little Rock. The essays need to be postmarked by November 17th. The exhibit, Commitment to Haiti, Build Back Better, will open to the public at the center December 4th and remain until early February. For more information about the essay contest, the exhibit, or the Clinton Presidential Center, you can go to clintonpresidentialcenter.org. Monday night, the University of Arkansas Wind Symphony will bring brass, Tchaikovsky, and more to Baum Walker Concert Hall at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. W. Dale Warren, the conductor of the symphony, recently came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk to P.J. Hrabowski about Monday's concert that will feature guest artist Erjean Kong Violin and the return of a once-dormant ensemble.
We've kind of resurrected the U of A Brass Choir. A lot of our brass students kind of missed playing that repertoire, and so a bunch of them got together and said, hey, can we do a number on the concert? And I said, absolutely. And they're going to do maybe one of the most famous fanfares of all time, the Paul Dukas Fanfare for La Prairie. You know, it's probably the music that everybody knows out of that particular opera.
The fanfare, yes, the very famous,
sure.
Wonderful fanfare.
So all brass, and then we open with a great overture by Andres Makris, the Aegean Festival Overture.
He wrote that
for the National. He is very Greek,
okay.
Right. He grew up in an Aegean seaport and obviously on the Mediterranean. And so he was a principal violinist for the National Symphony Orchestra in Washington, and they were looking for a hot opener for tour, and so Howard Mitchell asked him to write it, and he did.
Okay.
And then Major Albert Bader of the United States Air Force Band heard it on tour and heard it there, of course, at Constitution Hall, and they collaborated about the arrangement for wind band, and it's absolutely spectacular. It's everything that you can do in 10 and a half minutes he threw in there. It's pretty hot. There's not two measures of the same meter in the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds exciting.
It's exciting. It's an ABA, so it's incredibly exciting on the front and back end, and then the middle is gorgeous. You'd
wow.
swear you were on a boat out in the Mediterranean just floating and maybe drinking coconut juice, we'll say. And then we're going to go to Erjean's piece, as you've already mentioned, the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto in D Major. Again, a very much standard part of the repertoire. She's remarkable. I don't have all the adjectives for her, but she's pyrotechnic when she plays this thing.
Then just one more piece, correct?
But it's a big one. It's the La Fiesta Mexicana of H.O. and Reed. It's a 22-minute, three-movement work that is his best-known piece by far of all of his output, and he did all of his research while he was in Mexico on a Guggenheim Fellowship, and he wrote it in 1949. Of course, he was very well traveled in the 30s and 40s, And it has three terrific movements. They're very different. It's the first movement is Prelude and Aztec Dance, and of course it's about bringing in everybody for the festival, as you would imagine, and all the Aztec dancers and all their plumage and their colorful outfits and the fireworks. And, you know, there's always the church bells ringing to announce all the different ceremonies. The second movement's the Mass, because, after all, it is a religious ceremony, the fiesta is, and they're paying homage to the Virgin Mary, and it's a powerful Mass, really amazing. Starts out with the church bells again. And the third movement's the carnival movement, and that's when Mexico is at its best on the days of the fiesta. And it's every mariachi band thrown together, every marimba band thrown together. You know, it's the markets, the itinerant circus, the bullfights, the town band, the cantinas. I mean, and like I say, it would be appropriate for us to wear sombreros, you know, because there's so much mariachi activity in that movement.
Kind of a sad note. This concert is dedicated to one of your students, correct, Tony Collins?
Right. We lost Tony just in August, early August, and he was a member of the band program at Arkansas, and was in the marching band, was in the Wind Symphony, a terrific flute player, and he was diagnosed with brain cancer in January of 2009, and so he fought valiantly, but we, like I said, we just lost him, and so we've dedicated this semester's concerts to him, and the marching band is doing the same thing. Their whole season, we're wearing TC pins on our lapel. Because Tony was one of those students that you get once in a career. You know, we have every student we have in the band program is great, but he was a different kind of kid. Nobody wasn't better off for having known Tony, because he was positive. He had a smile on his face every moment. Nothing could get him down. And if you needed to be picked up, you just wanted to go have a chat with Tony. And so his departure for us has been devastating.
I bet. I hope his parents know that you're dedicating.
They're going to fly in for both concerts. And I should tell you that he's from Alaska.
Right.
And so, you know, that they're making quite a sacrifice to fly in for both concerts this semester. And, you know, they were here for the Fayetteville Memorial. Mm-hmm. And so they've been very involved with his career in music, and not only his flute, but, of course, his band experiences. And so he he was a big part of their life. He has a younger sister, obviously, but he was just a huge part of our program. We just can't believe he's not with us.
W. Dale Warren is the conductor of the University of Arkansas Wind Symphony. The symphony will perform Monday night at Walton Arts Center in downtown Fayetteville. He talked with P.J. Hrabowski in the Richard B. Atkinson Studio at KUAF.
It's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious.
Singer and actress Julie Andrews was born on this date in 1935 in England. Andrews came from a musical family. Her mother was a pianist, and her stepfather was a singer. She first found success on the English stage in the late 1940s. Andrews came to America in the 1950s, starring in the musical The Boyfriend from 1954 to 1955. The next year, she starred in My Fair Lady as Eliza Doolittle, a role that earned her a Tony Award nomination for Best Actress in a Musical. She followed that with another lead role in the musical Camelot in 1960. Andrews received her second Tony Award nomination for this production. She made a leap to film stardom in 1964 with roles in The Americanization of Emily and Mary Poppins. It was as a lovable, magical nanny in Mary Poppins that Andrews won her first Academy Award for Best Actress. The next year, she was nominated for her part in The Sound of Music. Over the years, she has worked on many projects with her husband, including SOB, Darling Lily, The Man Who Loved Women, and That's Life. In 1996, Andrews returned to Broadway in the musical production of Victor Victoria, winning her first Tony Award for Best Actress. Andrews experienced a huge personal setback in the late 1990s when her vocal cords were damaged during an operation. While she never regained her powerful, sharp singing voice, she continued to act in films and television movies. Andrews also received a special distinction around this time, being made a dame by Queen Elizabeth II of England. As befitting as an English dame, she played royalty in The Princess Diaries and its sequel, The Princess Diaries II, Royal Engagement. She's also written several children's books with her daughter. In 2007, she received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Screen Actors Guild for all her professional accomplishments. On this date in 1964, Arkansas Travelers General Manager Bill Valentine, who was an umpire in the American League from 1963 to 1968, ejected Detroit Tigers pitcher Dave Wickersham, who was going for his 20th win, after Wickersham violated a rule against players touching umpires. Valentine was also known as one of the few umpires who would call New York Yankee Mickey Mantle out on borderline pitches, and he was one of only two who ever threw Mantle out of a ball game. Continuing with some baseball history, on this date in 1961, Roger Maris of the New York Yankees hit his 61st home run of the season, breaking Babe Ruth's record of 60 set in 1927. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's Friday, the 1st of October. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the studio is Becca Bacon-Martin. She is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers every Friday.
What? What? Kyle, speak up. I can't hear you. What?
Oh, but you can.
I can because we're in the beautiful Anthony and Susan Hoy news studio. And even though it's bikes and songs outside, I can still hear myself.
And you. Yes.
And they can hear us. How cool is that?
Have you taken in any of Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue yet?
I have not. I hope to try to take in some Saturday evening. You know, they expect this year to be bigger than ever because it has been made a Harley Riders Club destination, pin destination. There's 1.2 million members of the Harley Riders Club.
Are they all going to be here?
Well, I doubt it.
Okay.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to get here today.
That's probably true.
The good news. Mm-hmm. Is that not all of Bikes and Songs is now focused on Dixon Street.
Right. It when it started, it was concentrated, and it's kind of spread out now.
Now it's the Arkansas Music Pavilion. Mm-hmm. It's the Washington County Fairgrounds.
Right.
And it's the Baum Stadium parking lot / Tyson Track Center area. So here's what's going on if you're not one of the ones running for higher ground. Tonight at the Amp, Pat Travers and Rick Derringer.
Two legendary rock guitarists.
Classic rock and roll. Tickets start at $10. Show starts at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow night, the Black Crowes at the Amp.
That will attract a crowd.
Tickets start at $20. Show starts at 7 o'clock. There's a barbecue tasting at 6:30 today at the fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. The first 3,500 who pay $5 get to taste the barbecue competition.
Oh.
The Parade of Power, which I personally love, starts at 4 o'clock on Saturday.
And where does that begin?
It's a new route. It starts at the University of Arkansas parking lot number 56, which is the corner of 6th Street / Martin Luther King Jr.
Right.
Boulevard and Razorback Road. You can find out more at bikesbluesandbbq.org, at the official Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue information booth, which is at the corner of Dixon and West Avenue, in the Northwest Arkansas Times, or in today's What's Up when we've got all the schedules and a story about the Black Crowes.
There you go.
Now, if you'd rather be anywhere but Fayetteville.
Yes.
We got you covered. Springdale mm-hmm. has a family fiesta at the Springdale Civic Center tomorrow.
That's on 265.
11 to 3 has music, a fashion show, all sorts of food and fun in the name of diversity and domestic violence awareness. The American Girl Fashion Shows are tomorrow and Sunday at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale, 12:30 and 4 o'clock. Darling little girls dressed up in the American Girl doll fashions. It's a fundraiser for the ACO, and it's the company picks one nonprofit in a state to get to do this, and ACO is it. So tickets are $35. You can find out more at 751-5441. And the Music of Our Lives is open at the Shiloh Museum. It's an exhibit exploring the role music has played in the Ozarks. And that's 10 to 5 on Saturday, and it's my favorite word.
Free.
Going on north in Rogers. There is the Fall in Love with Hobbs Fall Festival at Hobbs State Park Conservation Area. Starts at 10, includes living history, guided hikes, nature programs, Dutch oven demonstrations, and live music. It also is
free.
Honky Tonk, Portraits of Country Music, 1972 to 1981. At the Rogers Historical Museum, it's a traveling exhibition of photographs by Henry Horenstein, who went on to be a much renowned photographer. And it's open 10 to 5 on Saturday. And also
free.
There's a fall festival at the Center for Nonprofits at St. Mary's in Rogers with Scarecrow Building, a plant sale, and live music from 11 to 4. And Nonsense is tomorrow night at Rogers Little Theater. Tonight, at 5:30 is Oktoberfest.
First Friday.
And they're going to have live Volksmusik and polkas.
Yes, and chicken dance. They're going to try to set the Bentonville record for most people participating in a chicken dance.
This is what horror sounds like on the radio. There's also an exhibit that you really must see if you sort of like bikes and songs. It's called The Bike Riders, and it's a photographic study of outlaw bikers by a photographer named Danny Lyon, who is a huge documentary still photographer. It's at Crystal Bridges at the Massey in Bentonville, and it's open from 10 to 5 tomorrow and 1 to 5 on Sunday. Still going north in Bella Vista. Live on stage in Northwest Arkansas kicks off its season with the Dallas Brass at 2 o'clock Sunday. It's actually at the Arend Art Center in Bentonville. And tickets are $25 for adults and $5 for students. Pea Ridge has a special event at the military park called Gorillas, Guitars, and Guards. It's sponsored by the Heritage Trail Partners, and it starts at noon on Saturday. And admission is $5 to $10 for that. The Arkansas Apple Festival is this weekend in Lincoln. Arts and Crafts today, tomorrow, and Sunday, and a parade at 10 o'clock Saturday. Eureka Springs has Corvette Weekend. And I would endorse a visit to Iris at the Basin Park on Saturday, because there's an artist there I really want you to go meet.
And who is that?
His name is James Dean. No, not that one.
Right.
And he is the painter of the Pete the Cat series.
I don't know Pete the Cat.
You've heard of the New Orleans Blue Dog.
Yes, very much so.
When we were in New Orleans a couple of years ago, we met Pete the Cat. James Dean is actually from Atlanta, but a gallery there had Pete the Cat, who is a blue cat.
Oh, okay.
And Pete the Cat is great fun. There's an image of Pete the Cat with God reaching down and touching his head with one finger. And there's an image of Pete the Cat looking at the lovers. And Pete the Cat as one of the lovers. And I love Pete the Cat. And James Dean will be there signing things and talking to people from 1 to 4 and 6 to 9 on Saturday. Nicest man you'll ever meet.
And it's in the Basin Park?
It's Iris at the Basin Park, which is right next to the Basin Park.
Right, absolutely.
On Spring Street.
Absolutely.
And in Fort Smith.
Yes.
Radney Foster.
Ah, I love Radney Foster's music.
So tell us about him.
Well, I think you would classify him somewhere between Americana and country western. Clever lyrics, great musician.
USA Today called his latest solo effort Revival one of the best albums of the year. And he is playing at Second Street Live in Fort Smith at 7:30 today.
Should be a great show.
Tickets are $35 at 719-8783. There's also a production of Eat Your Heart Out at Fort Smith Little Theater. I really would like to see this show, and I'm not going to get to it. It's at 8 o'clock, and it's a play about waiting while you're waiting.
Is this the last weekend?
Yes.
Okay.
It's about a waiter in New York waiting tables while he's waiting to get his break on Broadway. It should be fun. 783-2966. The Arkansas-Oklahoma State Fair wraps up this weekend in Fort Smith with Mr. Cabbage Head and the Screaming Radishes tonight and freestyle bullfighting.
What is freestyle bullfighting?
I don't know.
I've seen that listed in the information.
I'm terrified, and I'm not sure I want to know.
Yeah.
But it's tomorrow night.
Okay.
And admission to the fair is $6 for adults. In Alma, tomorrow night at 8, The Light in the Piazza, a 6 Tony Award winner, is stopping for one night only at the Alma Performing Arts Center. Tickets start at $20. And if that doesn't get you out of town, you know, hole up and read a book.
I was going to say, just get a blanket and stay on the couch.
Get your blankie and stay on the couch, and we'll come back Sunday and tell you some other things you can do.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers every Friday. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums. This first day of October means it's almost time for another round of arts and crafts fairs, kicking things off an art sale that benefits a new art museum in the Arkansas River Valley. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has this report.
Paintings, pottery, and various other works of art will fill the Harry E. Kelly River Park in Fort Smith today and tomorrow at the 10th Annual Art in the Park. Proceeds from the event will benefit the new Fort Smith Regional Art Museum. Co-organizer Peter Lippincott explains that the museum is the rebirth of an old organization.
It used to be called the Fort Smith Art Center, and we have closed our doors as the Fort Smith Art Center and are currently renovating a 15,000-square-foot building that was donated by Arvest and the Walton family to the to the art center, and that's now going to be a regional art museum. We're making connections with Crystal Bridges and also with the Smithsonian to become an affiliate member of the Smithsonian so we can get exhibitions that they produce and have available for traveling. And so what was very much kind of a homegrown art center is going to be much more of a player on the state level as a museum with traveling exhibitions and a lot more to offer.
Originally, proceeds from the fundraiser were given to Habitat for Humanity, but this will be the second year that the benefiting organization will be the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum. Lippincott has participated in the event for the last 5 years and says his co-organizer is the one who founded the event a decade ago.
Pat Little is the one who got it all started, and she's been involved with lots of charities in the Fort Smith area over the years. Her she likes craft shows and art shows to a fault almost. She just loves to go around and visit them, and her husband suggested that she should organize one and put it on here in Fort Smith, and that was the impetus for it 10 years ago.
The artwork has been divided into two sections, crafts and fine arts. During the two-day event, the public will be able to view and purchase the art, as well as enjoy some other festivities.
The first day, it's a reception on Friday evening. That's the 1st of October, and that goes from 5 to 8. And at that time, there'll be hors d'oeuvres and a wine tasting, along with being able to view the art. Then on Saturday, we go from 9 to 5, and there'll be a children's activity area so that kids can come and make some art of their own. And both days there'll be music the whole time that's also going on. Various, I think there's a choral group from Northside High School that'll be singing on Friday night, and then a series of local combos and bands and things will be playing on Saturday.
In addition to helping organize the event, Lippincott will be displaying and selling his pottery.
I do a lot of functional wear. Almost everything that I make, it's all made with glazes and in a way that it could be used. But some of the things I make are not functional because they're either too big or just made to be decorative. But a lot of what I make is functional, and even within the functional, there's a wide range. So I make cups and bowls and vases and other little serving trays and salt and pepper shakers and cream and sugar sets. And
those who attend the event will not only be able to view various types of art, but learn more about the new art museum as well.
We do this activity to raise some funds, but really to raise our profile in the community, and as kind of a way to give back to families and individuals in the region.
Admission to the event is free, but Lippincott says they will be taking donations. More information is available at 479-651-6104. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Tomorrow night, the Fort Smith Symphony will open the 2010-2011 season with Enter the Titans, featuring Mahler's Symphony No. 1 in D major, Titan. And the concert also features guest artist Jade Simmons piano. Jade Simmons is with me in the studio.
Hi.
Hello. As is John Jetter, the conductor and music director.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for coming up this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, thank you.
If I were to try to list your accomplishments, I'd take up all the time in the segment. Was piano your first creative love?
Piano was definitely my first instrument. I think before that, my father plays African drums, so I think technically the first instrument I ever played was a little set of bongos, probably about 4 or 5 years old. But piano was my first serious instrument. I went on to play viola, clarinet, was even in the drum line and was drum major in marching band. But it was the piano that no one ever had to make me practice.
You just took to it.
I loved it. Loved it right away, actually.
You tend to like also the percussive nature of it as well.
I do, and I think that goes back, again, to the kind of the percussive roots that I have with my father. In college, even, along with being on the drum line, I founded a group called Boom Shaka. It was a percussion and dance ensemble, and I was telling one of the reporters here for the paper that when I got out of undergrad, I even considered auditioning for Stomp. Instead of grad school. But again, it was the piano that I kept coming back to, and I'm glad that I found a way to kind of marry the percussive elements with the piano. That of course, with the Grieg, that's not the case, though.
Oh, come on. We can add a few things.
Well, that undergraduate degree from Northwestern, indulge a non-musician a little bit. The percussive nature of a piano can be discovered or played or exploited by...
Sure. Well, you know, I like to say that I like to look for repertoire that really, where rhythm is a focal point. My current CD that's out is actually this connection of American music, but the connection is this rhythmic thread and how the role of rhythm has changed in classical music, you know, from the beginning until now. And, you know, just being in a society that's definitely kind of an iPod generation, there's a little bit of everything that I listen to, and I'm always drawn to pieces that have a more rhythmic nature. So with classical music, for instance, Prokofiev is one of my favorites. Composers easily.
John Mahler to start the season. Was that a collaboration between the two of you some time ago when you were discussing this?
Well, no, I wanted to pick something real easy to start the season with. Yeah. Well, Mahler's music over the years has become more and more popular, and there are as many or more Mahler performances as there are just about any composer now. He's definitely very popular, his music. And the First Symphony shows up on a lot of season-opening programs. It's one of his tighter compositions. Yeah, he's the guy who wrote those long symphonies. And yeah, some of them are pretty long. But this is it's of course his first symphony. And it clocks in just under an hour, if anyone's wondering. And it's a real tightly constructed piece, and audiences love it. And I find that people who are first timers to symphony concerts over the years will hear that symphony and they love it. Mm-hmm. Even though it's smaller, it's big late Romantic era pieces, about 100 musicians on stage for it, the extra horns, the enlarged woodwind section, two sets of timpani. It's just a terrific piece. So it's a great opener. And of course, we wanted to open the concert with a concerto, and the Grieg is one of the most popular piano concertos. Mm-hmm.
Have you had a chance to work with the musicians yet? We're talking on Friday morning. The performance is Saturday
tonight.
Night
will be the first orchestra rehearsal, and that's always, you know, lots of fun. A little bit nerve-wracking it can be, but I've been assured that the Fort Smith Symphony is a collegial group, so I'm excited to get to play with them. I mean, it's you know, I spend most of my time as a recitalist, and I'm on stage by myself a lot of the time. So when I get to play with orchestra, it's always a treat because you feel like you're getting to collaborate, which makes for a very special type of music making.
What's that first few minutes of conversation in rehearsal with a new symphony, a strange symphony, like?
Well, you know, the pianist is always first usually worried about the piano itself. We always say we want to make friends with the instrument, and then we can kind of be comfortable with everything else. I think what's really key for the soloist is to know that you can trust the conductor, you know, and John seems trustworthy.
Uh-oh. Well, I'm sorry.
We'll see. But you just want to know that you can feel free to be yourself on stage, but you really want to give the respect that's due the orchestra because they've been working on the piece as well, and you want to make it a concert that really feels like, again, that word collaboration. So the first few minutes should be a lot of fun with the Grieg. I mean, it's a great piece to open with.
Well, especially since with this piece, the way it opens is it's the orchestra for one measure, right?
Yeah.
And then the piano, you have a moment to play in front of everyone, and then we play for a moment, and then we sort of come together.
Yeah. It's very heroic concerto.
Yeah, it is. It is. And there's that opening. There's the portion where there are a lot of things that one can do or does with this concerto. And, of course, all the notes are there. And from a conductor standpoint, it's sort of finding out what the soloist is going to do. What's going to happen here? There's spots, you know. Well, is this going to be done straight here? Is some time going to be taken? Mm-hmm. And from a conductor standpoint, at least for me, it usually takes that time to kind of find out. And, you know, most of the time I'll get it. Or sometimes, okay, well, then it's more time than I thought here. So I'll kind of put it in my memory banks. And then the next run through, that's hopefully there. So it's kind of getting to know what our parameters are. And then, of course, you get to the concert, right?
And then it's all different.
Then it's all different anyway, so.
Jade, you are, as you mentioned, a recitalist. You're also a guest performer. You also are an educator. That's near and dear to you, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I love to spend as much time as possible whenever I'm in a city in the local schools, because that's just, I mean, you know, you've heard, you know, kind of the bad reports about how the arts are being cut out of the schools. So now more than ever, it's really crucial when an artist is in town to spend part of that time, not just hold up in a practice room somewhere, but with, you know, what we hope will be the next generation of listeners. And for me, as an African-American female classical pianist, it does mean something different for me to walk into a school that has, let's say, a big minority population and sit down and play the piano. Simply by walking in the room and sitting down at the instrument, I'm already breaking tons of stereotypes. I mean, we'll probably go to Howard School today, and the instinct might be that it's going to be John who's going to sit down and play. Mm-hmm. But when I actually am the one that sits down, already the students are going, wow, we've never seen this in this way before. So for me, it's very fulfilling in that sense, because I can't remember as a young pianist seeing anyone else who looked like me on any of the stages around town. So in that way, it's a very special time for me. But also just quite practically, in a business sense, if we want a younger audience to come, they have to be exposed to the music. And I don't mean that in that educational elitist kind of preaching
droning
way. No,
right.
No, I just mean that it's another option of music that to me is just as powerful and just as passionate as all the other cool stuff that's out there.
Is that where Mozart on the Move comes in?
Mozart on the Move is one of those projects I take the Twinkle Variations into the schools. I almost said Twilight. I've got pop culture on the brain. I take the Twinkle Variations into the schools because it's a tune that everybody knows. And each variation has a different character, and I ask volunteers to come up and actually act out the character of the music. And it's already a way to show that even classical music has this emotional power to it, and is quite easy to enjoy.
You were in the Miss America pageant.
I was.
And for your talent, you played Chopin.
I did.
How did you pick which piece to play?
Well, for starters, you only have 2 minutes. So I knew I needed a short piece, and I knew that my audience was going to be a large and general audience, that I might have some classical music connoisseurs, or most likely I would have more that were not. So I knew I needed, for lack of a better word, a flashy piece that would wow an audience and judges. So I chose a Chopin Etude, C sharp minor, 10 number 4, one of the most horrendously difficult pieces. Looking back now, it terrifies me to think that I actually did that on live television. But what I remember the most about that performance is when I got to the high point, the climax of the piece, you know, all these 16th notes, fingers flying, the audience, which is, it was in Convention Hall in Atlantic City, size of 2 football fields. And the audience just erupts into applause at the high point of the piece. And I thought, you know, no one came out and gave a pre-concert talk about where the climax of the piece was. No one had to let them know how to listen to the music. Nevertheless, they got it. And that showed me that, again, classical music, like any other genre, has that power to move people instinctively. And that's when I knew, man, you know, I'd love to make a career at this if it's going to move people in this way.
When someone's on the red carpet, they're often asked, who are you wearing? If mm-hmm. someone were to ask you for tomorrow night's concert, who are you wearing? It's an easy answer for you.
You know, this time it's not.
Oh.
Normally I'd be wearing a dress that that I've designed. I haven't had the time since my 2-year-old son has come along. But I will actually be wearing Vera Wang tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
And the reason is I went on Twitter, and I allowed all of my friends and fans on Twitter to vote between 2 gowns. And they chose one that I'm glad they chose, because it's kind of this Greek goddess gown, which I'm calling a Nordic goddess gown, since we're doing the Greek, and there are all these Nordic themes in the Greek. So I like to take it to the audience sometimes, and so I'm excited to wear a pretty cool dress, even though I didn't design it this
time.
But
you do design.
I do.
Sketch.
I do.
Any tickets left for tomorrow?
Very few. We have a handful, and people can call the symphony at 452-7575 for tickets. Also, if you're listening and you have tickets for tomorrow night and for whatever reason you're unable to attend, boo-hoo, please call us, and we can reuse those tickets, resell those tickets. That's what we've had happen a little bit. And I think it's it'll be a terrific concert, a terrific first concert. I also wanted to mention that the concert will begin with the Grieg Concerto. Then after the soloist, we have the applause and the soloist finishes and after she walks off stage, all the musicians who did not play the Mahler Symphony are going to rush out on stage, and we're going to spend about 10 or 12 minutes doing something that we call Beyond the Score. So we'll have the whole Mahler Orchestra out there, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the symphony. We'll play about 6 or 8 excerpts from the symphony, very short, of things to listen to, and then we'll have intermission, and then we'll perform the symphony. So if anyone's a little thinks that listening to Mahler might be a little daunting, we'll make it real easy for them.
Jade Symonds will perform with the Fort Smith Symphony tomorrow night at the Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center at 7:30. And this morning, she performed in the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. For that performance, she selected Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C-sharp minor. Jade Symonds in the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF this morning. She'll perform with the Fort Smith Symphony tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center. You can learn more about the symphony at fortsmithsymphony.org. And Jade Symonds' debut CD is titled Revolutionary Rhythm. This is Ozarks at Large. And that is Ozarks at Large for Friday, October 1st, 2010. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Greenland. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Thanks so much for tuning in. Don't forget, Sunday morning at 9, weekend Ozarks at Large.